Chestnut Cove is a small village on an island. It's a tight-knit community, and life is pretty good there, even if nothing particularly exciting ever seems to happen. One morning, though, folks all woke up to the sound of bells and trumpets, and they discovered that King Milford, who lived on another nearby island, had sailed over to make a proclamation. Whosoever grows the largest and juiciest watermelon by summer's end shall inherit my entire kingdom. Good luck. And with that, he took off. Perhaps I should tell you at this point that everyone involved here, both the villagers and the king, are hippos. Thus begins one of my favorite children's books, written and illustrated by Tim Egan. At first, after the decree goes out, nothing much changes. People, or rather hippos, laugh at the idea of such a silly contest and go about their business. But soon enough, they quietly begin pondering what might be possible if they won the contest, and with it, the whole kingdom. More specifically, they begin thinking about all the things they could have. Beautiful dresses and fancy hats, many more pets, the nicest wagon in the land, as the old one is suddenly seeming kind of tired. A ship to sail away on. The reader is left guessing that this list could go on and on. And Tim Egan confirms our hunch, saying it was endless how much they didn't have. It was endless how much they didn't have. I love this book because it is funny and ridiculous. And also because it's one of those kids' books that speaks to adults at the same time. That one line has followed me around for years, popping back to mind at terribly inopportune moments. You probably know those moments, those times when we've realized we've been pining for more and more stuff. Or maybe for one really fabulous thing in particular, to the detriment of all the life that's already here. Sometimes children's books pack a punch with their truth-telling. So too does Scripture and our saints, much as we might sometimes wish for all three to go a bit gentler on us. We will not get so lucky today, not with St. Francis or these passages from Luke and Acts. We could try to gussy them up, the saints and the Bible, but the truth is, they're grisly. All the peaceful garden statues and bird baths in the world could not tame Francis. As best we can tell, Francis was deeply challenging. Born to a wealthy silk trader and a noble woman, he enjoyed living lavishly, at least for a while. And then, as a young man, he changed courses abruptly and abandoned this wealth and comfort, choosing instead a simple life. But it wasn't just simple. It was often really, really hard, painfully so, as he chose to let go of the rest. And he didn't just quietly wander off to do his own thing. He made a point of calling people out for the ways their lives of excess missed the mark. My guess is that he wasn't always so pleasant to be around. At least not if you were a human. No small wonder, then, that such pointed scripture passages were chosen for his feast day. They are stories that could fit into a kind of a strange kind of thriller movie, or maybe a graphic novel turned really wrong. First, we have the book of Acts. There is a deceitful couple, and they are living in this early Christian community where everyone has agreed to share all that they have. But these two, they've decided they want to try to beat the system and hoard what had once been just theirs. But pretty quickly, we see that it doesn't pay off. Each one just up and dies the moment their lies are discovered. And in the gospel, too, we have a man who amasses so much he can't even store it all and realizes he needs yet larger barns. That's the answer. He has great plans to relax and enjoy all his wealth eventually. And then, bam, it's not going to pan out that way, he learns. His time is up right now. Maybe this is sometimes true in the very literal sense that our readings seem to portray. It sounds like a straightforward lesson. Don't waste all your time trying to amass possessions because you might keel over before you have time to enjoy them. Perhaps true, not super uplifting. So much of the time, though, this sort of dramatic storytelling in scripture is not just about what we're supposed to be avoiding, but even more so, it's about how we are to live our lives actively and positively. Back in Chestnut Cove, as folks get more and more wound up about how much they don't have, how much they could have if they won the contest, life begins to unravel. They get suspicious, worrying that neighbors might be secretly going after their watermelon plants. And so they begin steering clear of each other, keeping watch of their gardens through the night, and eventually things begin to turn nasty. It all comes to a head, though, when Eloise, a much beloved pet pig, falls off a cliff and is left dangling in peril. And in their great worry, everyone forgets the widespread distrust and they work together to rescue her. The villagers come to their senses and have a spontaneous watermelon feast to celebrate her safe return, jovially shunning the whole contest just the night before the king is to return. It is short, simple, and fairly improbable. After all, it is a children's book. And perhaps for the same reasons, it sticks with me, adding nuance to these tricky passages and this demanding saint. The deceitful couple in the book of Acts and the rich man in the Gospel of Luke, and a good deal of the time, I suspect maybe you, we get sucked in. Our attention turns to be focused on how much we don't have, salivating over all the things we could have. The algorithm it's so clever in what it shows me, beckoning me to click and scroll and click. My email and my snail mailbox offer all manner of beautiful and clever and helpful things that would surely make my life so much better. Sometimes something happens to grab my attention and place it back where it belongs. Beloved Eloise, the pig dangling from a cliff, for example. Sometimes, though, we get to choose to do this on our own and choose to practice it. And actually, we can do that anytime we like. That's where the invitation in today's stories take over. God, and I think also this wonderful author, Tim Egan, and St. Francis, they're all asking us to set down that endless reaching, that endless wanting, the endless not having, and let what is here and now be enough. God is asking us to hold it all a little more loosely, maybe hold what we have with open hands rather than clenched fists. She's asking us to wonder about the future rather than fret and work so hard for it that we miss out both on what our life is already and also what is to come. St. Francis didn't just run away from over-the-top wealth, from the world of having so much and yet always wanting more. He didn't just leave that. He also went to something, to a different kind of abundance, to a rich life full of beauty and connection. And perhaps amusingly enough, we can follow the example of these fictional hippos, too, and hear how God is inviting us to see that the feast is already here. The watermelons are ripe. They are ready to share. The whole wild natural kingdom, in fact, has already been given to us. No contest needed. All we have to do is open our hearts and our minds to receive it here and now.